Welcome to the MEP podcast, where I'll be exploring the intersection of sport and spirituality through a variety of practices that ultimately invite us to learn, grow, and connect. I believe that through movement and mindfulness, we can create an awareness within that will allow us to integrate as individuals and connect more deeply to our mind, body, and spirit, together navigating a way to the way. This episode is supported by Holos. Now, I've been enjoying this product for the last year or so, and it's an overnight muesli with a blend of organic whole grains, nuts, seeds, and dry fruit, and packs 20 grams of plant-based protein and 380 calories of nutrient-dense, delicious, organic fuel. Whether it's for breakfast or on the road, Holos provides an awesome, easy option to fuel big workouts or an easy meal. My favorite flavors are peanuts and maple and vanilla, and I like to top it off with honey, cacao nibs, or nut butter when I'm at home. It comes in a reusable jar, and all you do is add your choice of milk. The packaging also is recyclable too, which is nice. Right now, you can use the code MEP10 and get $10 off your first order at liveholos.com. On this episode of the podcast, I have on Nina C. We got in touch last year, and I've been meaning to have this conversation for quite some time, but in the last year, she's made a lot of progress and taken some inspiring steps. So as usual, trusting the unfolding timing of the universe has worked out perfectly. She is a triathlete, a kinesiologist, exercise physiologist, run coach, and more recently a PhD student. She ran the Speed Project earlier this year and recently raced the 70.3 Ironman in Victoria. She is doing a lot of things very quietly in a very beautiful and inspiring way. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with her as we dive into all of the above. Her upbringing, getting into sport, navigating injury, balancing education, relearning how to balance her own work, life, movement schedule, and stepping into being a coach. So enjoy this episode. Thanks. All right. Welcome to the podcast, Nina. It's great to have you here, and I'm excited to chat and hear more about what you've been up to. But first, just thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. I'm glad that you reached out. I think I'm just excited to be here.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that kind of got my attention from what you've been up to is just your Instagram and how nice it looks. You know, when I decided to get into triathlon specifically, I was like, this sport needs an aesthetic revolution. And you're one of the few people that like make it look really cool from like, you know, the imagery you share and everything. So yeah, I wonder, you know, starting off at that point, is that something that's always been a part of your life and kind of having taste? You know, I've seen glimpses into your where you live and it looks nice as well. So it seems to be like a way of life for you.
That's a huge compliment because I don't think that it is at all. Like I have a hard time posting and being creative, but it's a fun area to explore. In terms of this place, it's a new place. It's a new house, but my twin sister is an interior designer. So she's definitely more into the aesthetics and design and has come home from London. She lives in London and been kind of helping pick and choose a lot of items around here. But thanks about the Instagram. It's a definitely an interesting platform that I'm trying to navigate to. And it's great to kind of hear that from you because it's definitely a challenge for me to be present on that platform.
Yeah, it can be tough, right? I think there's like such a balance between vulnerability and intimacy and then the aesthetics that make sense. And then you are working on cool projects and seem to be associated with some good brands as well. So then like making sure that balance is in there in a way that like works for you and for the brands and that stuff as well.
Yeah. Definitely a tough place to navigate in this new world, I would say.
Yeah. Well, you're doing a good job from the outside.
But yeah, in the triathlon, I guess, like going back to the other question, it wasn't something that I was into right away. It was a lot of navigation until I found it that I really enjoyed it. So, and then sharing that too on the platform has been both something that I would like to share, but also like, a very vulnerable place to be able to like, this is what I like to do and I'm doing it kind of thing.
Yeah. And I think like when we connected, maybe it was like a year ago or something now, I was quite interested in you're Canadian or you live in Canada and you are an Asian woman and you're doing triathlon. So, you know, there's not a lot of that combination of thing going on top of like making it look cool. So I am curious, you know, as your journey as a young woman and finding triathlon and, you know, how that was for you, you know, probably not seeing Asian women in the sport and having like, oh yeah, that could be me, or I could do that, you know, having that sort of sense of a path to that and finding your own way. And probably, I can only imagine, you know, maybe your parents were like, what are you doing? Or mm-hmm. at least people in your world might be like, why are you into that kind of thing?
Yeah, definitely. I think, it stems from like, my parents definitely asked like, such an expensive sport. Like, what are you doing? Like, it seems really hard. Like definitely very Asian background where maybe not like that. I don't think my parents really outwardly put pressures, but there are maybe internal pressures that I feel. I'm kind of following what they would want. So it's like, I guess growing up wasn't really in a lot of like structured sports and stuff. It was more like I went to math camp and mm-hmm. I had piano lessons. And I think they're a way of just trying to like, you know, what's best for kids, and because they're just navigating it as well. I think you'll figure that out too. They'll be like, I think they need some physical activity too. And they put us into like badminton camp because that's also a very Asian thing. And me and my sister did not like it. We skipped it every Saturday and went to the mall instead. But it was a kind of navigating like, what do I really want to do? And what are my interests rather than kind of like try this. I think it was good to kind of explore it. Another maybe example is like did piano, and maybe my first kind of like not act of rebellion was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to do like classical ballet, like movement. Mm-hmm. And they didn't understand that very well to want to explore it as a form of activity or movement. It's ballet, it's what can you do with it? I think they wanted me to like play piano at church, so that's why they put me in that as well, and some discipline in sort of learning piano. But I guess like triathlon, it was just me in high school figuring out or navigating maybe a little bit more independence and getting a lot of mentors from like in school with teachers like, try this. And I think I first got into just running in general as a way to extracurricular activities and put that on the school like resume and things like that. But that's where I did find something I love to do in a community and just friends outside of like an academic schooling. Mm-hmm. And then there was a coach, a cross-country coach was like, hey, I want to introduce triathlon to some high school kids, and that's how I got introduced to it. But I didn't really get serious into it until maybe like university or afterwards. Just a way to kind of find connection and find friends as a means or find a community, more than like, oh, this is a really cool sport, I want to try it. It was just like, oh, I love movement, I love like meeting people, and and it was a good way or segue into that. So I think that's, kind of how I got into triathlon, and then I really enjoy it.
Yeah, that's like a really nice way to get into it. I feel like many people, it's like they got an injury and then they had to do this, and they're like, more of a type A, like self-abuse that ends up people in triathlon. So that's like kind of a nice story to get into it. I'm curious, like when you started running in high school, was there like a race or a practice, or was it like track or cross country when you're like, oh, I like this, you know, and you kind of had that realization?
Yeah. I think it was, I don't know if I was like, oh, I love the act of running. It was just like, I loved after school having something where I can go to and be with people and do something together and work towards like a race. And it was like a fun school trip to like go to races and compete. And then I just found like friends that I like enjoy doing things with, that was like, I actually enjoy this activity too. And it's really easy just to like, let's go for a run. And I think that's kind of where it snowballed into some other things. But I think that's where the start was, is is that we had cross country in the fall and then track in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, I think my high school, I don't even think we had either of those. It was like soccer, rugby, basketball. That's it. Pretty yeah. much. I think there was a golf team with two people on it or something like that.
Yeah. But, I think also like with, sorry.
No, go ahead. No.
With running, it's like a little bit more accessible in a way that's like, it's just putting feet on, like shoes on your feet and just going out and running. Whereas like, because I was never introduced to a lot of structured sports, I don't have any skills. So you can't have coordination. Like you tell me to like play basketball or like catch a football. Like I can't do it. Or even like people ask me like, can you like play ultimate frisbee on our like, team? I'm like, like I'll try, I can run, but I don't have that skill for sure. So I think also like running just seemed like this is a good place to start and explore. Like a safer space and like, oh, I have to learn a whole new skill like that we're good at. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess there is something just so natural about running for a human being that there it takes away a lot of that other intimate or intimidating kind of factors potentially. So I'm curious then, like your high school teacher, your running coach introduced you to triathlon in some way. So, you know, I'm curious to know, like, when was that? Did they train you in the different disciplines, or were they like, hey, there's a triathlon race and here's a bike, try it?
I think in high school it's more just like getting like high school students kind of excited about something, and he was definitely really passionate about it. And I didn't have a bike because I think that's also a pretty like big barrier into the sport is having that. But we just like, oh, we're going to do a spin class in the morning if you want to come. So I went to that, and there was like this Kids to Steel races in Ontario that he was like, do you want to try? Like, there's also our school didn't have a pool, like kind of introducing it to the students and just getting us excited. It wasn't like, here's some coach workouts. It's super structured. It was more just like getting us excited about doing something fun together, which I think is a great way. Cause I also like when I did get more into competitive into triathlon and training with a lot of like with a team and a lot of like juniors. And I'm like, oh, you guys are so young. You guys are actually in high school when I started. And like, they're already doing such structured stuff. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I definitely didn't start that way.
Yeah. So then what was your first race experience like?
I would say it was fun. It was scary. It was fun, but I did it with friends, and it was more just like, let's go do a road trip somewhere and like do this thing together and, you know, hang out afterwards. And I think that was definitely, made it more of like a, yeah, like a sustainable, like, I want to do this for fun. It is fun as an activity than like having that like shift to maybe more like, oh, like pressure and competitive aspect, which I am pretty competitive. But like, I think starting off, it wasn't that scary looming, like do well, you want to do well, or pressure, train hard kind of a thing. Yeah.
And I imagine as it was something you kind of fell into through the community and friendship and things like that, it doesn't sound like it was something where your parents were kind of like, you've got to win the race. And so maybe that there was like, because it wasn't something they put on you, maybe there was less pressure there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Now that you say that, I think they didn't really understand that world either, but they just saw that I enjoyed doing it. And it was, And I think they obviously want to see me happy. So.
Yeah. So then you mentioned like it was in university when you kind of got a little bit more competitive or serious about it.
So I tried out for the varsity team cross country, really awful experience. I think back then too, which wasn't that long ago, it was still I don't know what to say. Cause I wasn't in it, but it was a very intimidating space to be in terms of varsity sports. And me coming off as just like, oh, a recreational athlete, like, let's give it a try. Like, maybe I have something. So I found a community more as like, I was trying to find a run club, basically. Mm. I enjoyed running. How can I meet people in university? And I found this tri club. Because usually in university, they're like, oh, I'll join all these clubs. Mm. And I joined the run club of the tri club. And I met people. And I enjoyed it so much that I would, sign up to be an executive on the team for previous, like, later years. And then being on the executive of the team, you had to, like, be at the workouts and host it and make sure, like, you know, athletes and registration and all that stuff, like, so I had to be a little bit more involved, and that's how I was like, okay, now I got to show up for a swim workout and like see what this is all about. And I also was like a fitness instructor in university, so like led some spin classes and like had to do that. So I got into like spinning on a bike, stationary bike, and then within the university like triathlon club, there's this university. Like competitions with like different Ontario universities, like and races. So then we're all going to this. You want to do it, and it's fun, kind of a thing, road trip, and you know, try it out. And it was like a little bit less scary because like it's obviously during the winter season, so the races were maybe in a pool, and Toronto Heart House. Toronto had like a. You swam in the indoor pool. There was like the section where you spun on a road, like a spin bike, and then run around the track. So it was less like, it's not a real triathlon, okay. But it is a triathlon, kind of getting into it.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, because that's kind of like some of the like, Super League races now are like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it sounds like you were kind of like learning how to become a coach, maybe without planning on it as well.
Yeah, I guess the coaching aspect of what I am doing is also something I stumbled into. I think grateful for like people that have seen potential and believed in me and given me opportunities. Because I think after university, I moved up to Victoria, BC. Absolutely loved it. But then moved back to Ontario. And was just trying to find my community in Toronto. And I was like, oh, like this local run store is looking for some help. And I was like, I could work at a run store like temporary. And they asked me instead to be a coach for their run club. And that's how I got into that. And I really enjoyed that experience. And it just kind of snowballed from there.
Cool. What was the shop in Victoria?
Oh, no. So I moved in Victoria and then I moved back to Toronto wanting to, you know, find a community. And, okay. And the local run store in Toronto was Black Tail Running. And Mike and Maya are the store owners. And they gave me the opportunity to be a coach in their run club. And that definitely started sort of the extra hat of being a coach.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
I really do enjoy.
So I'm curious as well, like as you're going to university and you're, you know, involved in this tri club, you're leading fitness classes, and then you're studying kinesiology. Mm-hmm. And, you know, do you notice like, are you applying the stuff you're learning as you're doing it? Is there like self-experiment going on with that sort of thing?
Yeah, for sure. Because in school, you're learning like all the anatomy and the physiology, and you're like, hey, like, I'm actually like, exercising and what are, you know, like it, so it is really neat. Like, I think when I chose to go into, that field, I wasn't sure what it was going to be like. I think it's also really scary to go from high school and all these universities come in and be like, apply for these programs. You're like, I don't know what I want to do. And you're like, mm-hmm. I guess I got to choose this. And like, you know, it's going to dictate the rest of my life or something, or it doesn't have to, but it is pretty scary. And
like, it feels like it will.
Yeah. But once I got into kin in university, I definitely enjoyed it. And I was like, it does have a lot of parallels to my interests and how I can apply it. So yeah.
So were you like always into your studies? Because I feel like a lot of people probably go to university, kind of do get forced into choosing something, and it's hard to see the application, right? So I think for you to have like it align with your interests and kind of path forward is, I imagine, made it more enjoyable and also just like more easy to be excited about.
Yeah, for sure. I would say it's school's still not easy. Mm-hmm. I definitely don't think they set you up really well in terms of like, it's just like this, like, actually you learn a lot of life skills about like time management and like, yeah, and managing stress and balance and everything. I quite enjoyed it. It's never like, what am I doing in this field? Like, mm-hmm. I always saw that movement is one of, I guess, like core values. I really do mm-hmm. find movement something that I strive and look towards doing and part of me. And so just learning about kinesiology is like the study of human kinetics movement, right? So mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, this is definitely the field for me, even though I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do with it just yet.
Yeah, sure. And I wonder, like you mentioned that university can be good for teaching you about managing stress. I wonder if it's more that it's an experience of living with massive amounts of stress and what that is like, rather than how to manage it.
Yeah, for sure. because it doesn't end.
Yeah. So I'm curious, like as you were going through school and like developing as an athlete yourself, like were there certain things that you learned and then you were like, oh, I'm going to adjust this or try this, and it felt like it made a big impact?
I guess that's a pretty good question. I feel like you just go through, I think a lot of people maybe don't ask themselves or reflect a lot. Like, I'm just learning this now too, of like trying to ask myself, what do I really want? What are my core beliefs? Like, what are my core values and things like that? Because I think also like being in an Asian family is like, I think I always want to make choices that are for maybe my parents or like others. And I like tend to think of others more, like I'm definitely a people pleaser or trying to, you know, and, mm-hmm. and, so I don't trust myself and the decisions I make. Mm-hmm. Is it really for me or is it for somebody else? But I think you, like, I think with life experience and like maybe, good and bad, the mm-hmm. bad stuff too, it teaches you a lot to be like what's important to you. So yeah. In terms of like school, yeah, I kind of forgot your question now.
Well, I think it was like, did you find anything that you like applied from school to your sort of like athletic development? But I think, you know, your answer is, you know, a great life lesson is to start asking those questions, because I think it's natural for us to sort of unconsciously put other people like, okay, are my parents okay with this? You know, essentially like, am I still going to be loved if I do this? Right. And so often we'll sort of like edit what really we want for the benefit or safety of that, like maintaining love and relationships and stuff.
Yeah. That relationship or something.
But the reality is if we actually know what we want and really do it, we'll still have that, but it feels like scary.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Yeah. And you know, yeah, kind of knowing like there's their family, there's love, like they will support you mm-hmm. in whatever decision you make. But knowing, just figuring out what I really would like to do, mm-hmm. what's important to me as well as what's important. I think I always try to think about others mm-hmm. and don't really ask myself the same questions.
Yeah, that's a good pass for burnout and depression, I would say.
Definitely been through some lows.
Yeah, well, and like you said, it's like the highs and the lows. We need that to learn, and you need a certain amount of life experience to get that perspective to start to dig into that stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, you know, are there certain tools that you use for that sort of reflection, be it meditating or journaling or some kind of workshop or experience or anything like that?
Yeah. I've only got into it, but I am trying to like journal more and write more, because I feel like there's so much thoughts and definitely an overthinker in the head and inside. But like putting it down on paper and expressing that has been a good kind of like way to, you know, find some clarity in all of that mess up here. And then finding like a support system and like a like safe people to be able to verbally express as well, has been a way to, for me, but I didn't really get into meditation. I find movement kind of meditation, and, a way to, for me, if I have a lot of emotions or overwhelm, to use that as an outlet as well. And it's a choice that I do for myself. So, I think I feel safe in that space for sure.
Yeah, that's great. So back to triathlon, I'm curious now to know, like coming out of university, like what was your sort of, how did your focus or development into the sport go? Like, was there like a peak that you had gotten to at a certain point? Because I know last time we spoke, I think you were still kind of dealing with some injuries. So
yeah,
I'm curious to know, like, what was like the rise to the kind of most serious triathlon time for you?
Okay.
Like what kind of races were you doing distance wise and like, you know, trying to podium or, you know, what was the, that sort of like feeling and experience like?
I guess like going back when I moved out to Victoria, it was like, oh, new experiences, like new city, like I'm on my own. But also like trying to find a community. So I joined a tri club and got a coach. And it's the first time kind of getting like a one-on-one coach. And that's how I just kind of got into really real racing and I loved it. And I saw that, you know, I was podium, like maybe not top, but I was like, you know, getting podium like age group. And I was like, oh, I can do this. I'm doing it really well. Like I enjoy it. And then I kept that going when I moved back to Ontario. And I was like, I really enjoyed having a coach and some structure. So I found a team out in Guelph, LPC, and they also had this hurdle project team, which also like helps kind of the barrier of cost. Cause like my parents didn't really like understand this sport. I didn't have a lot of like funding to be able to like pay for coaching monthly. So I like inquired about it, say like, hey, like you have this program that helps like development athletes or just like athletes in general. And it, could I get involved? Like, and it started off like I got coaching and then I think they saw potential and they're like, okay, let's let you on this program. And that's kind of how I found a community, got really into triathlon, got some structured training, you know, making goal race, like, you know, planning out a season and having goal like races in mind and then just kind of like continuing with that. So I think in that time period, like loved it, raced, did racing, like, and was podiuming on and maybe top, like, and I was just like loving it. And then obviously didn't really, as a new athlete, I think a lot of people don't understand the not supplementary things of things like strength training, the nutrition, the sleep, the recovery. So obviously I was on a roll, but definitely not sustainable.
Right.
And then hit kind of like a roadblock with injuries and having to go through all of those downs with that and learning from it and understanding like this is still something I enjoy doing. So how can I be smart about it and make sure it's something that I can do for life and that it's something that I can enjoy and not burn out? Because I definitely experienced that for sure. And so coming back to this sport was like interesting in a way. It was like, how do I come back in a way that's like, I don't hate it. I don't like, you know, like stress about, I got to get my bike ride in. I got to do this run or like, it's so overwhelming to like, look at a workout and be like, you know, it's not fun. It's more just like work. Like, and I think definitely the pandemic has also helped shift that mindset a bit. Like, you know, like, do you want to come back to this sport? you know, how can you come back in a way that, you know, serves you more positively? Mm-hmm. So I am still in it. I love it. Mm-hmm. But less pressure myself. Just the goal is just to stay consistent and have fun. There's a lot of life changes too. So it's like, what's realistic to kind of balance?
Yeah. So yeah, I'm curious as well, like what were you doing, like Olympic distance races in this time or longer than that?
Yeah. Just Olympics, sprints and Olympics was okay. Like peak of life when I was like doing really, really well.
Right. Yeah.
And, since the peak, 2019 was the last year. And then the pandemic hit. I was like, I want to transition to try some halves and long course, but I think the debut has always been delayed, whether it's injury, whether it's COVID related, and no races happening. And then, this season where things are just starting up again, I think also mentally I'm like, oh, like I'm not ready. I'm never ready. Never feel ready. I'm just going to commit. And then I committed to Victoria. I was like, oh, well, this is where it all started. So I'm going to like do my first year. And I went and I had an amazing time and I didn't have any expectations. It was just like, go out and have fun. And you're back in Victoria, enjoy it. And that's that. But this season definitely has been a lot of other life priorities have kind of come up. Mm-hmm. So the racing has been like, yeah, not so much there.
Yeah. And so in Victoria, was that a 70.3 that you did?
Mm-hmm.
And that was your first one?
That was my first one. Yeah.
Yeah. So how was that experience like going to that distance? Because it's like twice as long as an Olympic pretty much.
Yeah. I think like, you know what? I enjoy training a lot. I enjoy the structure of it. And I think it's more just like when it becomes racing, I put too much pressure. And then it becomes not enjoyable. So mm-hmm. I had to shift that mindset around. So like, I think because there's been times where like, I'm going to debut, but it never happened. The training has always been set up that I could do the distance. It's just like me wanting to do the distance really well.
Yeah.
That has limited me to maybe like toe the line. I think like the transition wasn't very hard. I'm racing this weekend too.
Okay.
I signed up very last minute.
What are you racing?
It's a 70.3 distance.
Okay.
It's just, what was I getting towards? But yeah, I was like never feeling ready to do it. But I'm like, you know what? I've continued to train as consistently as possible. You know, I'm maybe not like the fittest that I've ever been like in comparison to the past, but you know, I can do the distance. Just go out and have fun because that's what it's all about. And the environment and the people and all of that is what you also really enjoy. Mm-hmm. So have that as your sort of goal and priority for that race rather than sort of the other competitive side of things.
Yeah. Yeah. I imagine like, yeah, the mental side of it is really interesting. Do you feel like having done the Victoria half Ironman distance, like it's kind of like, okay, the like debut is done. Now I can enjoy it a little bit more.
Yes. And no, I think Victoria was like, this is the debut. So you're going to have more of it. So have less expectation. Just go out and experience it. You're going to learn from every single race that you do. Mm-hmm. And so it does give perspective in terms of like, what is the full look like? Mm-hmm. And what's involved, but also like thinking realistically, what can I manage with my day-to-day training? And cause you're, I guess like you're only like that dealt the cards, you know, you can only play the cards that you're dealt. Mm-hmm. And so if I had, all these other, life things happening and this is all the training you can fit in, mm-hmm. then this is what you're presented with and then go out and do the best you can with what you're presented. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like this weekend, not the greatest setup. I'm fit. I can do it. I can do the distance and I'm just going to have fun.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like the best way to go about it. I mean, you mentioned earlier, how can you approach the sport like for the rest of your life, right? And it'd be like back to some of that like enjoyment of when you first discovered it. And it feels like, you know, it's hard to let go of attachment to placing or times, things like that. But yeah, one of the coaches I listened to on his podcast, he talks about like you do all the training and you put in the time and then you just let your body like express the training on mm-hmm. race day. And yeah. for me, I try to remember like, oh, I get to do this. You know, it's like, yeah. I'm fortunate, you know, not everyone gets to have this experience. And so much of like living as a human being is just having really deeply rich present moment experiences. And I think triathlon is certainly that. It can be anyways.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like if you ever want to be inspired, go to races. And I tell my athletes too, like the work is, you know, the race is kind of the cherry on top, like the celebration of all that time and commitment that you put in through the process and that progress that you see there. That's the kind of like, be proud of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Like each race, you definitely can like learn something, especially when going into a new distance. I'm curious, having done your first 70.3 in Victoria, like were there a couple of takeaways in terms of like, oh, you know, I could have fueled like this, or I should have maybe done a bit more of this type of like tempo run or over distance stuff or mm-hmm. anything like that?
Yeah. Definitely on the running. Yeah. The run needs to be a lot stronger. The run is actually I thought was the strongest out of the three, but because the running is so like heavy load, right? Such a mm-hmm. load on your body, it's more prone to like injuries in that sense. So that's where sort of like, oh, like, and that's where kind of the injuries came from and how to take a lag. And I'm like, oh, I'm showing it now in this race. Like the run needs a lot of work. Not where it used to be. But in terms of fueling and stuff, I'm pretty good. I think I had a pretty good like fueling strategy and been practicing with it. And I know the importance of it because I think that's one of the big things I like to teach like my athletes for sure is like fueling and mm-hmm. making sure an athlete is well fueled. It's energy. And so like not even just in the race, but outside and that mm-hmm. outside of like that to make sure everything else is sustainable. So in terms of that, I think I was okay. Swimming, maybe like a little like more open water swimming, because first time I was in open water this season was actually at that race. But the water was beautiful. Elk Lake. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. I definitely want to do that race at some point. I was looking at it for next year. I was like, oh, May 28th? That sounds great. I could go back to like where I grew up. Yeah. And I was like, oh, but I'm getting married on the 27th. So that's probably not going to work.
I didn't know you're from Victoria.
Yeah, I grew up in Victoria. Okay. Pretty much from when I was about 5 until, you know, end of high school.
Yeah. Well, I knew you're from BC, if I thought Vancouver. Oh, I didn't know that. I love Victoria.
Yeah, it's beautiful. But yeah, I think, you know, the fueling one is interesting. I think that was, I stressed out so much about that when it came up to doing my first 70.3 and, you know, eating carbs and that stuff has been a really big journey. And even now I'm like, I actually just got this. So I'm learning more insight from that as well. Pointing to continuous glucose monitor. And it's interesting. I think like for me, it's a lot of underfueling has been an issue. And then that, you know, then you're fatigued, then you can't train, then you can't get the adaptation from the training. And I wonder like from your experience and the people you coach, does it seem like the underfueling is an issue?
Yeah. And I think I had experienced it myself, like first and foremost to like, be like, something's not working. Something needs to change. And the other amazing thing is my coach did her PhD in, she used to be an elite athlete. And she did her PhD in her on overtraining and reds and, looking at like energy. And so she's very good at kind of like making sure that the load meets, the training load meets kind of what you're able, you need to support that load. And so if your mood is not there, your mentally is not there, it really does say like, ask questions like, how are you doing outside of the training? Mm-hmm. So I definitely needed to, think about fueling a little bit more. I never had an issue of like maybe unintentionally under fueling, like super busy days, like, oh, I'm going to skip lunch, like, or, you know, binge eat at night or something like that at dinner. But it made you be more mindful and aware of like, I'm always thinking about food. I'm grumpy if I don't have food. And when I first wake up, it's always like, I need to eat. And so that definitely has, you know, fueled also the interest into like my PhD. Also as a coach, seeing runners, and I think a lot of new runners too think just about the running, the workouts and stuff like that, and don't really understand that you need the other. I never say it's not supplementary, it's part of your training too, as like a something to think about is your nutrition. It's extremely important. So it was definitely like I had to learn it myself and see it and to understand that it's very important for race situations, for training, for life in general. If you want to have like this high volume of training as well with endurance, and how it's so important for that. So that's what I would say about it.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm curious as well, like as you went through kind of those injuries and that sort of down period, you mentioned like you became more aware of the strength training as well, being a component that really was kind of missing. Because it feels like, yeah, triathlon alone with the three disciplines is challenging enough, but like you really, you know, people talk about nutrition being the fourth, but strength training is now like really become like the fifth almost. And it's like kind of necessary.
Yeah, it's huge. I also enjoy it, but at first, like, I think I didn't get into it because it was a scary space to kind of get into. And, but you don't need like a lot to be able to get the strength and maintenance and mobility and all that to be able to support that, your training. But, so right now I'm coaching this team out in Toronto, this running team where a couple of friends are like, oh, we want to run a marathon. And they're all like new to this endeavor. And it's challenging from like being a new runner or new in the endurance world to be like, great to have a big goal, like a marathon in mind, but, in a short span of time to teach them that, a lot of education around what goes into marathon training. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely been a learning experience for me to, to see the need that like people need that science communication, that education around that, so that they can be self-sufficient as an athlete themselves to know the importance and be able to support themselves in the journey that they chose in. Mm-hmm. Strength and nutrition, really important stuff.
So if I was coming to you and I was like, okay, I run like 2K, you know, once or twice a week, and I want to run a marathon. If you could pick the race date, would it be 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, 24 months?
I would probably be like, girl, I'm running 2K twice a week. You probably just, you know, want to build that foundation. So just get like, you know, your body needs time to adapt to mileage too. Like sometimes when you like look at like really top athletes, like I want to do what they're doing, but they probably started running in high school and then has continued that throughout. And so their body has adapted to being able to handle a lot of mileage or a lot of hard mileage too. But if you're starting off and having not done a lot of that, your body's not going to be like happy if you're just going to add too much too soon. Mm-hmm. And if you're not going to support it with the strength and nutrition either, then the training is just going to hurt you more than support, like, you know, adapt from it. So I would tell you, if you were that kind of runner, you'd be like, let's just kind of get into running and build time on your feet. Like, I mean, wouldn't even think about like adding in intensity just yet. Like, just like run, enjoy it and not put that pressure to yet. Maybe like sign up for a 5K, 10K, like, you know, get into like what racing would feel like. And maybe, you know, before kind of tackling something as big as a marathon. I would probably say like, let's do it next season, or maybe marathon next season or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I feel like people sometimes, like, you need the big goal, right? To like get into it and have something to work towards. But I think people are like, yeah, I'm going to do a marathon in 6 months. And then they start training 2 months later. But like, realistically, it feels like it should be at least a year away if you're not running a lot already.
I would also like, it would be very individual. So if the athlete was coming from like another like athletic background or like, definitely very individually, have to get to know that athlete first to be like, suggest. But if you're coming from couch potato kind of a thing and be like, I want to run a marathon, I'll be like, yeah, like maybe it's possible, but yeah, it's a lot of things you gotta sacrifice and commit to and focus on, and not just the training, and making sure that athlete understands that as well.
Yeah, I think like there's obviously like the time on your feet, right? Just the like muscular endurance that comes with running even a half marathon or marathon distance. But then there's also like the aerobic capacity for that sort of endeavor as well. So you're kind of, you have to train two systems at once. And it seems like maybe the aerobic is kind of a slower, longer term build. The muscular is not super fast either, but you know, there's a lot going on to create the adaptation to do that. Like the first race I ever did was a half marathon, and I was playing soccer a lot. Mm-hmm. And figured, okay, I'll be good. And like, it was not good, you know? And actually because of that, I was so like physically destroyed by the end that I ended up tearing my ACL playing soccer like a week or two later, because my body was just like, you know, totally in the, like fatigued in the pits basically, and couldn't like handle anything else. So, you know, that was a pretty big lesson for me. But I think like, yeah, people going into longer distances like are usually unaware of this like different systems that really need to be built together and integrated over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Patience is what I would say. Yeah.
There's no,
might be like against their goal. Like, I really want to do it, but I think having them understand the realistic, like, we want to keep you safe. Yeah. We want you to still be able to run like later down the road and not have to like deal with a really big barrier that sets you really back.
Yeah. So speaking of potentially unsafe long distances, you were a part of the Speed Project with on their team. And I'm curious to know about that experience, because I've never done it, but it looks like, you know, amazing adventure, and, you know, the brand documented it really beautifully as well. So I'm curious to hear what that experience was like, because I think like what I remember seeing through their like media was that like, they basically had open applications for women from all over the place.
Yeah. So I didn't know about that.
Okay.
I didn't know that they were calling out for people to join. And, cause I got approached, Rosanna, my friend Rosanna.
Yep.
Rosanna's like, oh, On's looking for runners for the Speed Project. Would you be interested? Indeed, they need runners. And I was like, yeah, totally. I'd be interested. I've been wanting to do the Speed Project as a challenge. And so she connected, and I that's how I got onto the team. But when I found out and asked the other runners on the team how they got on, they definitely applied. And I was like, oh, like, I didn't know there was application. But I looked for the application. I found that it was pretty like pretty intensive. They were looking for like, if you run ultras or marathons or had like a sub like 130, like half marathon time, or like a sub 20 or 19 minute, like 5K. Like, I was like, well, cause I think the goal was they wanted to be in contending too for the women's race, mm-hmm. to win it. So they were looking for strong runners. I'm so glad I got to be part of it. Really grateful for On for, sponsoring to go and like have that experience. Cause it was, like a pretty amazing experience. The other thing too is like, it was an all-female team. The whole support crew like couldn't have done it without them. It's such a team effort. Mm-hmm. The running's the one thing, but I think like the logistics, the planning, the background end of stuff also is what makes the Speed Project the Speed Project. And the other thing too is like, I didn't know any of the other runners going into it. And two, it's kind of like a shared experience for everybody on that team, because everybody, the runners themselves and the whole support crew and the team, the on team, it was all of their first experience doing. So we were just doing this first thing, like thing together, the first time. And so nobody knew what was going on or how to navigate it. We had to navigate it on the spot. And we all didn't know each other really, except for meeting the week leading up to it. So that, I think that was like pretty powerful to have, like, go through like a lot of challenges as you're doing this project or speed, like, you know, relay race with people that you don't really necessarily know that well yet. And it really kind of bonds you in that shared experience. So I thought it was a pretty amazing experience to do.
Yeah.
I would say.
So just to like paint this picture a little bit more, like how many women runners were on the team and how many people were on the support team? And how long did it take you guys?
You women? So I think for officially, because there's five runners. So I think the OG is like three guys, two girls. And that's one category. The all female team is five girls. And then there's open teams where you can have as many runners as you like to do it. So that was kind of scary. I was like, I've done relay races, like more just like for charity, running from Toronto to New York or something like that. But it was like for fun and charity, and there's tons of people in the race to kind of hand off, so you're not always running. And like five people, like it's a race, they want to win it. Like there's expectations there, and like we gotta run it fast, and like turnaround time isn't that much. Like five of us, like how are we gonna, like? Luckily, we had an amazing coach who's from New York. She's done it herself. I think she's the only one on the team that has done it. So she was able to give some insight as well. Cause otherwise, like, I think everybody else is like, what are we doing? How do we do this? So five runners, we had one coach, and then I can't even count how many people we had on the support team from on, but they were like the all-stars of the team. And then we also had a huge media crew following us. Hence why the beautiful stuff they captured to document that race.
Yeah. There's a great like short film that they made. So I highly recommend people go check that out. But so with the support team, like you had the coach, then was there like anybody doing like massage therapy or was there like people making you food or did you sleep at all? Because this probably took like 2 days, 2.5 days.
Oh, yeah. I think we left on the Friday at 4 a.m. And we were wanting to beat the goal time, but we ended up like car breaking down and getting lost. And so we had to shift our goal. But we got in, I think, the next day in the evening. Yeah, in the evening.
So it was around like 30 hours or something more.
I think it was probably like,
35.
Yeah, something like that. Maybe like 30, 20. Yeah, something like that. I'm not too sure. I don't really look at numbers that often.
was like, were you running 5 miles at a time and switching off? Like, what was that cadence like? And then when you're not running, like, what are you doing? Are you trying to have a nap? Are you just like slamming like fuel, like gels and stuff like that? And
Yeah, something like that. So they started off with like, I'm going to go kilometers. Okay. We started off like running like 8 to 10 kilometers. And then we would then cut the distance, to maybe 5 kilometers. And then eventually it was just 1 mile repeats. And then we, in terms of strategy, we had, not five runners. We had six runners. And we kind of split off. Three runners would take the night shift. And then, so I didn't run the night shift. And then three runners would run the J. And then within the three, then you would just continue to like go out for like 2 or 3 hours, just doing mile repeats. And the support car, like we had a camper van and also a car that would just follow us. In the car, there was like water and fuel and ice packs and towels and stuff like that, and good vibes and music, yeah, just to kind of keep us like motivated and everything like that. And then once we were out for like 2 to 3 hours, that group went back to the van and was able to like maybe have a longer rest period in between. Okay. And that time it was just like naps, eat stuff so I can have time to digest it and be able to like still run. And like, yeah, basically it was just like that. So I didn't really get to see like Death Valley or like a lot, because like whatever time I had in the camper van, I was passed out or like supporting other people or cheering too. I didn't get to experience the night like either.
Right.
Yeah.
And were you guys on roads most of the time, or are you in the desert? Cause like every team can just like choose their own route, right? And most people seem to get lost at some point.
Yeah. So I think the strategy was that there's this power line section that's basically cuts the distance quite dramatically, and I think a lot of teams use that power line route, and so that was our plan, and it would start in the night portion and then carry throughout the day. However, I think people did the second half of the power line, okay, and we did the first, and because nobody on our team like done it before, we weren't really prepared for the terrain. So the first place team girls, they had like ATVers and stuff like that to be able to go on that terrain.
Oh, and, wow.
Yeah, on the power line train. And we just had a Denali car. And literally like the car, you know, like, the runner would run 1 mile and so the car would meet you and then switch off. But the car couldn't even make it to when the runner finished the mile, was how slow that car was able to go on that terrain. It was just like too bumpy. Oh. And I think eventually like broke the car, because like later in the race, we just left it on the side of the highway because like it wasn't working. So like, that's when we're like, okay, we're not contending anymore to be first. We got to change it up. And so we didn't do the power line the second half, and we took a longer route onto the highway, which was really scenic, but it added so much more time, so much more mileage. So it was a difference. It was like a mix of like road and trail, or like dirt trail. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, yeah, sounds like such an adventure. I'm curious, I guess my last question is really like, you know, you go on this adventure with all these strangers for the most part, like how quickly were you like intimately connected with these other women?
I would say immediately when we started the endeavor. I think the first days leading up to it, everyone's just trying to like get to know each other, you know, getting all set up for the race and actually like understanding like, okay, what are we doing? How do we do it? But once you're in it, people just like, this has to happen. Like, let's do it. We got to make decisions right away or be able to adapt or adjust really quickly. And everyone's super supportive, because I think we all have this goal in mind, and the on team was like really great at like just supporting us as runners. So we didn't have to think about all the other stuff. Sometimes when I think about and talk about like other people's experiences, like my sister also did the race. And they had one support person. Wow. So they also had to like drive. They also had to like navigate. They also had to like figure out food and all that. So I think everyone has a different experience. I was really grateful that the on team was like, took care of all that. So all I could focus on was just running.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. And I think, I had a great experience because of it. And it was like really a team effort, an all girls team effort, that was just supportive of each other and really challenging navigation through things that we didn't know, a lot of unknowns.
And like when you're out there and it's, you know, you're in the middle of nowhere, I imagine it feels like, you know, does it get emotional with the team? Like, are people like, why am I doing this? And like breaking down and need support and like having that sort of experience. Is that part of it for you guys?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely things get tough. Don't want to run anymore, but like I think because it's also a team effort, you don't want to give up because of, you know, you don't want to let other, like, we're all in it together. They're hurting. I'm hurting. We all know that we're all hurting. But we're all in it together, kind of a thing. So, if someone was not up for something, like, at the end, one of our runners, kind of dropped out. She was facing some injuries or pain. Mm. So at the end, it was like five of us trying to get to the end. So just like 1 mile after now, I was like, I don't even want to know, like, how many times am I running more? Like, we're trying to do math and stuff. And we're like, just tell me when I'm running. Like, I just don't, it's nonstop until we get there, kind of a thing. And people just kind of like supporting and being encouraging and getting through that. So yes, definitely some emotional turmoil that happens too, but then knowing that it's, you don't want to, yes, disappoint, I think, other people. And if you stop, then you know that it has to put on somebody else. And like, we're just doing it together. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think, well, I think that's one of the amazing things about sport and doing it in a team, right? Is like, you can go beyond what you think you probably can. And that is like really rewarding and beautiful. And then to do it in a team where there's that mutual support, like, it really just amplifies the human connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that definitely adds to sort of the bond that you have. You're like, I can never experience this again with anybody else. We did it together. Like, we know. Yeah. It's pretty magical, I would say.
Yeah. That's cool. I hope to experience that one day. Mm-hmm. Maybe next year, we'll see.
Yeah, definitely do it. Okay, what I would say is your team is really important. The people you are doing it with. Yeah,
I have an idea to like do it, not so much with like a to win it, but like to almost like make the focus on like the space in between the running, and like how can you like enjoy that? You know, is it meditating? Is it like physical aid or manual like therapy, things like that, like really to like, you know, amplify the space between the running. Cause I think the running is the running, you know, and it's going to be hard and it's going to be increasingly hard, but how do you like support that with like focusing on the other time?
Mm-hmm, for sure. Yeah. I think that's where the real connection to both self and others really happen, is in the in-between. I never even thought about the running. When people ask me about the running, I'm like, oh yeah, I ran. It was hard. But yeah. I think more about like sort of the in-betweens and the connections and the whole experience when I talk about the speed project rather than the running.
Yeah, that's cool. So yeah, moving into what you're doing now with your PhD, I'm curious to know a little bit more. I think you mentioned when we were just messaging, like it's early on, but I'd love to hear, like, you know, you can just tell me and tell us like what it is you're diving into and maybe why that sort of piqued your interest.
Yeah, I think very new. So in terms of this PhD, I'm only entering my second year and I'm considered like a PhD student. I have to do my comprehensive exams and then if I pass it, then I'm considered a candidate. But in terms of like the area of interest, it really just stems from like all of the experiences that have led me. I think also with the pandemic, it helps you it forces me to like really think about what's important to me, what I enjoy doing. And I think in the back end, I always thought about pursuing a PhD, but didn't think I was qualified to do it. Imposter syndrome. I think my master wasn't a thesis based, so I didn't have that research background, but I was really lucky to find a supervisor that I like, you know, creeped for a really long time, was like admiring him, reached out and he believed in me and said, yeah, I'll take you on as a student. So that was like encouraging for me to be like, okay, I can be in this space. I can't be in this space, but it hasn't been easy for sure. Huge learning curve. But in terms of the interest, it all stems from like, interest in triathlon, sports, endurance, me being a female athlete myself, maybe a person of color and representative and sort of like, you know, seeing more equality in terms of thing and driving sort of like there isn't a lot of research in female physiology. And so sort of the overarching theme that I want to look at is the female athlete and female physiology. And a lot of times when you read papers or even like training principles, it's all based on like, like university young males, and guidelines are all kind of based on research on that. But there are a lot of sex differences, you know, in a lot of, systems and things that are happening. So, and how can we really try to start to understand the differences and also female specific kind of like, you know, hoping to kind of change the narrative and like female in sport and exercise science and promoting awareness and kind of support for female athletes. I really enjoy working with them, and very valid questions throughout like coaching and being an athlete myself. And so that's also a big driver in terms of like the research interests that I'm going to pursue.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. I guess like traditionally, at least from my like limited awareness, you know, it's very much been like women trying to just do what the men are doing in many sports. Right. And like you said, there's a lot of differences physiologically, hormonally, and that doesn't necessarily work. And I know like that's kind of what's been championed in some ways. And there's certain sports where it's like, oh, she had a baby and now she's back like 3 months later winning such and such, or she did this while pregnant, you know, or, you know, hearing stories of women that often will like stop having their menstrual cycle because they're like overtraining, maybe under fueling, things like that. And so I'm curious, you know, if there's like specific pieces of that narrative or parts of like the health for women that, you know, you're either focused in on or you've seen where things have gone awry and they're like specific areas to try and like remedy and be like, okay, no, don't try and be a man. Let's like create a new paradigm for like the optimal female athlete.
Yeah. I think also like because of that, I think a lot of us are also really hard on ourselves, and maybe females more like not to say, but like, yeah, because if you're comparing yourself, like if he can do that, maybe I can, like, if I can't, then I'm not good enough or something like that. And, it's also like, yeah, there's just like, I think females don't know enough, cause we don't know enough a lot about what's going on. And even if you ask like a female about their menstrual cycle, I don't think they actually know a lot about them. It's not a conversation really that is openly had. I feel like it's becoming a little bit more like there's more awareness around it and there's more conversation, but I still think, it's not even, you know, even as a female myself, be able to discuss it with friends or something. Sometimes it's like, oh, like, are we going to talk about it or not? Like, a lot of times, maybe not comfortable discussing with your coach, and your coach is the one kind of programming everything. And there's a lot of emotions aside, like attached to things too. And so I think there's just not enough awareness and education around things. Even besides the research part and like a lot of questions we don't know yet, but even on like, you know, what's your menstrual cycle? Do you know your cycle? Do you know how you feel certain different parts of it? Do you know what's happening? Because everyone's still individual. Even the menstrual cycle is like a, you know, set maybe average 28 days or plus. So like people never really know when they're there or like what part of their cycle and how they're feeling. And I think if you're just asked those questions, then you can be like, you know what? I'm actually like not going to be angry at myself if I'm having symptoms right now and I can't push as hard or something like that. There's a growing prevalence of females in sport too. I feel like there's a lot of people that just said they didn't really have any open conversation or any education around their menstrual cycle or in relation to how it might affect like sport or exercise performance.
Yeah. Well, I feel like, you know, culturally, it's kind of like don't talk about that. It's like gross and like almost like shameful, right? So it's like, it needs to be just like brought up as like part of the human experience for women especially, but also like men need to be okay and educated. And I imagine like probably the majority of coaches are men. So like, not only are they not talking about it, but they have literally no experience of it as well. So there's a huge probably disconnect there between like the female athlete's experience and potentially, you know, it's even harder to talk about it with your coach if you have a male coach in many cases. So yeah, I wonder like, do you feel like it's important to have more female coaches and allow more of a safe space for that kind of dialogue and like experiential connection? Because even if you have the open dialogue with a male coach, they'll never know what it's actually like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I am all for more female representation, more female coaches, more female leaders, or even like, yeah, more male coaches working with females, more awareness there. The other thing with like, I guess, research, like it's science and there's facts, but it's never going to be like an absolute science to working with humans. Like we are an absolute. So like, I just want, like, I think like also like me learning as a coach and also like in clinical work where it's like, trying to motivate healthy behavior change. It's like, you know what the science is, you know what they need to be doing, but like, it's really working with, you know, and getting to understand the person themselves to really see change happening and making changes really hard and supporting them through that. And I think with females, there's a lot of questions and like maybe more like, you know, around it. So how can we support them to feel supported in a sport, in a safe space, mm-hmm. to be able to have those open conversations as well, so that they can in turn maybe lead to optimizing their performance or just feeling, you know, happier, more comfortable in their own body.
Mm-hmm. I like, you know, you mentioned like the coaching space and it's like coaching positive behavior change. You know, you've got the science, you've got experience, but there is like a total like psychology component in there, right? Like, and everyone's different. What's going to motivate this person? What's going to connect with this person? So have you like studied any of that, or has it mostly been just from your own experience that you've learned to listen and you know, like understand people more like deeply, I guess?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. Personal experience, me being in the space and trying to, you know, help motivate change and working with athletes or patients, and also myself being coached by other people too, and understand that kind of how like, yeah, you're working with a person, and you know what is good for them, but like, I don't know. It is kind of like learning. It's just learning to be around people and learning what motivates them and how, what makes them work. And so them as a person, rather than like, oh, you're a number on a book or a piece of paper that we need to kind of like try to hit this number or like objectives and stuff like that. Like great, like to have numbers and objectives, but like what you want to build that connection, I think, and that being vulnerable with yourself and your people around you that are supporting you can really kind of take you to that next step. I would say. So it's kind of like when you're looking for a coach too, it's like, do we work well together?
You know?
Because you can maybe be a really great person or on paper, but I need to be able to connect with you and work together for that next step. Further forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like that coach relationship, like in an ideal situation, is quite intimate. It's like, you know, they know you as a person, like can see like, how are you feeling? You know, like, oh, do you need a hug? Do you need to get like, you know, a little different type of motivation, like all that sort of stuff. And yeah, to be open enough to like share what's going on, because mm-hmm. I think yeah, we can have numbers and stats and things to look at, but you know, still people don't necessarily understand like the stress from my workout, the stress from not sleeping, the stress from my job, stress from my relationship. It just is all in the same pot, right? It's like you can't just isolate any of those things in the human experience. So a coach that understands that and like can not train just the athlete, but train the human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I also want people to understand like you still have value beyond sort of the numbers or the performance. Like, yeah, it's, yeah, you're not a statistic for sure. You're somebody that I want to be able to, I find join and community and connection and value in that. And so that's why I was like, I really enjoy being able to work one-on-one or coaching with athletes. And yes, they have a goal or maybe a number in mind, but to make sure that you are successful in that, like, how can I, you know, individualize it? Because, you know, there's a, you know, blanket, maybe training plan, but training plan never goes into plan, like, because there's so many things you can't control for. And individually as a person too, or as an athlete, there's so many things that go into making something successful. So learning with that along the way with your athlete too, to help them, guide them to be successful is sort of key.
So I have a question. How do you talk to an athlete that you're coaching versus how you talk to yourself?
Good question.
Is it the same sort of compassion or is it different?
That's something I need to work on for sure. I think you're always your worst critic, and you're super hard on yourself. So it's definitely a reminder. Do I talk to other people like this? Mm-hmm. Not really. So why are you talking to yourself like this? Yeah.
I find that anyways, I'm often like giving somebody advice and I'm like, that's for me too, actually. I need to do that too.
For sure. Yeah. It's going to be a process all the time. It's never going to be like, got this time.
So you are coaching, you're in the midst of this PhD process and research and all of that. You're racing, you know, a half Ironman this weekend. Life, it sounds like it's pretty full on. I'm curious to know, like, how do you find balancing these things? You know, when it's like, I'm supposed to do a 3-hour bike ride, but I've only got 90 minutes. Can that feel like it's good enough? Like, how do you navigate life with all of these like exciting but very challenging elements?
I'm still navigating it all. I would say like tips, the things that work for me is like to-do lists, but time blocking things and planning ahead, because I tend to overthink a lot of things. So if it's like, if I know ahead of time, then I can kind of prep for things. But also like, this is a continuous process of trying to be flexible and adaptable and to say like, you know what, like that's definitely not realistic today. So something, are you like being okay with like, okay, this is all I can fit in, or, you know, what's like, and prioritizing, like, you know what, I've got a deadline for this application, this, and I need to allot this much time. That's how long I take to do something. And that gives me no time to get in a workout, or I only have this much pocket of time to get that in, some movement. So it's challenging. It's always a big puzzle piece that you're dealing with every day. Because I think always like, oh, I've got a pocket of time. Like, what else can I check off my to-do list and, you know, and fit things in? But also like knowing that scheduling time for myself and just being flexible is really key.
Yeah. Do you make a point of like having unstructured time for yourself to just like be quiet, whether that's like go on a walk, or you mentioned journaling, because you know, you could just be doing all the time, but sometimes we have to not be doing something.
Yeah.
Or is that hard? Is that tough?
It's hard. Yeah. And I need to do more of that. For sure. you know, where I just find time to, like, I'm commuting a lot right now, which is extremely time, like a time waster, and it's just dead time. And I'm like, I need time. But sometimes when I'm just like after commuting, I'll just sit in my car for like a couple of minutes just to like, before I go on to the next task or like to do, is what I've recently found myself doing quite a bit for pockets of just like relief. But I need to maybe be more proactive in scheduling that time for myself. For example, after this, made an appointment, go to a spa with my sister.
Oh, nice.
So like, but I had to definitely plan ahead for that for sure. And saying like, this is needed. I need it. It's not like, you know, time wasted. It's time for myself. It's time with my sister, a quality time there. It's also time to like, just not over, like not kind of like keep running in my head or to do. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, and are you getting like a massage or something?
No, we're just going to like a Nordic spa with the waters.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Because I was going to ask like if and when you get a massage, like are you able to stop your mind from thinking of a million things and be with it?
It's funny because when I get a massage, it's more just like maintenance for my body. And yeah, like you're talking to the therapist. It's good to kind of be able to like release a couple of things, but it's still just like, it's not just like quiet time.
Yeah. Either. Okay.
Yeah. It might be different in like a spa massage, which I don't know, but yeah.
Yeah. One day maybe.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess kind of my last sort of questions are around, you know, this role that you have, you know, stepped into really as a, you know, female coach, female athlete, person of color, all these things, like you're really like showing a lot of young women like what they can be, what they can do in sort of like a dynamic, interesting life that marries, you know, pretty intense sport with, you know, the intellectual side and education and the community and, you know, the power of movement and all of these things. Do you feel, you know, pressure to be someone in that space at this point, or is it feeling like it's becoming more and more natural and like more clear that that is like a value that you need to like part of your mission and purpose?
That's a great question. I feel like maybe at the start when I was figuring things out, I didn't feel like I definitely belonged in that space. And that's something I definitely like a continuous conversation that I'm trying to have with me, myself. But as I've been given a lot more opportunities to be kind of a leader in that space, I'm enjoying it and I love it. And I do see it as something that like, I want to, you know, now I'm, you know, basing my kind of like research interest around it. Like, I'm pretty passionate about it for sure. And I see the need for that in the community. Like, there's a local Toronto group called Patchwork where they program a lot of things for like females and youth. And they run this like fitness program in the summer. And I've been part of it for the last 2 years. And it's just like such, it's amazing to see like they've created a safe space for like girls, for women of color to be in a maybe an intimidating space initially for them in that fitness space. And then having also like a kind of reflection meditation kind of therapy session after the fitness session to like really have this space to be able to connect and share emotions. And I see the impact it has on, you know, these girls, and I didn't see it myself as like, oh, like, am I inspiring people? Are they looking, you know, like, why did they ask me to be sort of the leader in this space? Like, and I need to believe in myself more, but like, I see the need and I would love to continue to be in this space. So yeah, didn't think about it before, but yeah, I do see the need and I love the space and I want to support it and grow it for sure.
Yeah, I think that's so great and so needed. And, you know, I think a theme of what you've shared is like constantly stepping into spaces that feel intimidating and maybe feel like they're not for you or not sure if you belong there. And And now you're providing that for like probably a lot of people, you know, probably a lot of people that you don't even know that just kind of see what you're doing and are like, you know, inspired to take one of those steps into a space that maybe doesn't feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, showing women that it's okay. And probably more than women too, honestly, you know, like even for me, like I said, like seeing what you're doing, sharing, like, I'm like, wow, this looks cool. Like it makes me want to go do it as well.
Thank you. Need to be more better at taking in things as well, because it's definitely very like for me uncomfortable to hear things about myself too. But I need to be more accepting of it. So thank you for saying that.
Well, I know it's I resonate with that as well. It's hard to like accept compliments. It's hard to accept that I am good enough. But yeah, I definitely want to just like shout out that you're doing a great job, and it's awesome to see and inspiring as well.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much. Definitely a lot of new spaces that I'm trying to get into. The big one is for sure the academic world and the PhD world. Still finding my stamp on that.
Yeah.
That area. Yeah.
And then after that, you'll probably write like a bestseller or something like that. And
no, I definitely want, like, what I see definitely is a lot more like science communication. I would love to kind of like, because I see that disconnect of like maybe the academic kind of literature mm-hmm. versus what's kind of being applied and kind of connecting that gap. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully being able to share what I'm researching mm-hmm. And apply it and, sure. But I don't know what my life will be like after this PhD yet. So
no, how could you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's exciting. And I'm looking forward to seeing what it looks like as well.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And hopefully maybe going for a run together one day.
Yeah, for sure. If I'm in LA.
Yeah, definitely. Or maybe we'll both end up in Victoria doing a race.
Yeah. Not next year for you, but yeah. Definitely. Maybe soon. It's beautiful. I honestly, yeah. Would love to make it back there one day.
How was the 70.3 course there? Was it like pretty nice in terms of, you know, not too hilly? The lake swim is nice, obviously.
Lake swim's beautiful. The scenery for the bike is beautiful. There is some hilly sections on the back end of the course. There's like one giant hill. Mm-hmm. And then the run, they say it's flat. It's like not completely flat. Mm-hmm. It's also on trails.
Okay.
So like a mix of like some sections on road, but mostly like trails, I would say. But it's shaded, so that's nice. Mm. And it's like two loops, so there's lots of spectating, and that kind of gives you energy for sure along the course. Really good experience, I would say.
Yeah, that sounds beautiful. I've gone on some runs out there when I've been back home, and I definitely like that. I think that race is going to have to be on my list of to-dos for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have a full season? Are you thinking about some other races?
Yeah, I'm actually doing a short race this weekend, the Malibu Triathlon. So it's a classic distance, which I don't know if that is actually very classic. It's kind of like 2/3 of an Olympic.
Okay.
And then I've got a 70.3 in December in Indian Wells. So I'm kind of like about to dive into a training block for that, but also with our new little boy who's a little over 5 weeks old. I'm like, all right, how realistic is this looking?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think I need to get a coach myself, because I really need to like be as efficient as possible and like know what the key sessions are to just like maximize 6 to 8 hours a week to get to a place where I can hopefully, yeah, enjoy it.
Yeah. I definitely see the value in having a coach, because you don't need to think about it, right? Mm-hmm. And then you can always get feedback, and they can kind of cater it to make it work for you. Mm-hmm. So yeah, all the best to you and your races for sure.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for your time and for sharing. And yeah, I'm glad we finally got to sit down and have you on the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Thanks for reaching out. This was a great experience, a first as well. So thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. Whether you listen to it on Spotify, Apple, or through our website, It would be great to hear your feedback and thoughts. If you're able to leave a review, it'll really help us share the message and share the podcast with more people. Thank you.